We were just beginning to discuss the pasuk of Barzillai HaGiladi. Just to review briefly the story of Barzillai, when David HaMelech was escaping from Avshalom with his entourage, whoever those who were loyal to David, and they were running to the Midbar Yehuda, to the deserts outside Yerushalayim. They had no food or water, and Barzillai HaGiladi found him and supplied him and his men with the food and the water that they needed. And in exchange for that, Mida Kenegan Mida, David had instructed Shlomo that the children of Barzillai himself was an old man, but that his children should be invited, should be regular guests at the king's table. We mentioned also, the Malbim points out, that the pasuk states, "Bevarchi b'nei Avshalom l'chicha," that he did this when I was escaping from Avshalom. Generally, when somebody does chesed to a powerful individual, certainly to a king, one naturally tends to suspect that there's self-interest involved. Right? It pays to do favors to powerful people, and therefore it isn't necessarily such a great mitzvah. But when Avshalom did this, when Barzillai did this when he was running from Avshalom and David had lost his power, so this was a mitzvah, the Shem Shemayim, to help David, and therefore deserved a special recognition, a special reward. The Medrash says a very interesting thing. We find that Barzillai's name is mentioned 5 times in the Parsha in Shmuel where this story took place. And the Medrash says, "Kol hamachil prusa letzadik," anybody who feeds a prusa is like a piece of bread, a broken piece of bread. A prusa letzadik, ke'ilu kayim chamisha sifrei Torah. It's as if he fulfilled the 5 books of the Torah. 5 times Barzillai Giladi, that's the 5 sifrei Torah. There are a couple of ways that the Mefarshim make this link. One would assume that not every time you find something mentioned 5 times, it's automatically connected to the Chamisha Chumshei Torah. There has to be something more to it than just the number 5. And the Etz Yosef explains that we find this concept of feeding a tzaddik, we'll see, we have to push that concept just a bit, is mentioned in all 5 of the Chumshei Torah. First of all, in Sefer Bereishis, so we have Lot and Avram who fed the Malachim. So I guess a Malach is sort of like a tzaddik. But if you don't like that, we have Yosef feeding his family, Yaakov and the brothers. In Sefer Shmos, you have Yisro feeding Moshe. He says, "Let him come and the Yochal Lechem." We know that Al Pi Medrash he meant more than that, but Ein Mikra Yosef De'Pshuto, the simple pshat is, he fed him. And then later, Moshe reciprocated when Yisro came to Klal Yisrael. In the Midbar, the Pasuk makes a whole point of talking about how Moshe fed Yisrael, gave him food. In Sefer Vayikra, the Etz Yosef says, we have the Korban Mincha. The Korban Mincha essentially went to the Kohen. Right? A small part of the Korban Mincha was brought in the Mizbeach, but most of it went to the Kohen. So it was a way of feeding bread to the Kohen, to Aaron and his sons, and to Kohen Gadol, the other Kohanim. So it's Machil Prusa Litzadik. In Sefer Bamidbar, again we have Yisro showing up in Parsha Shalach, and Moshe is offering to feed him and to have him come with him, although Yisro decides to go home. And in Sefer Devarim, we find that there is a taina against Ammon and Moab, and they are prohibited from marrying into Klal Yisrael because they did not give bread to Klal Yisrael when they Al-Devar Shalo Kinu Ephraim Balachim Uvamayim. So the pasuk is toveya, the lack of giving a prusa l'tzadik. So since this concept of prusa l'tzadik appears in the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, and Barzillai is mentioned 5 times, therefore Chazal make that connection. Musa Nevi'im has a little different twist. He broadens the concept of prusa l'tzadik to the idea of chesed in general, and refers us to the other Maimer Chazal, another Maimer Chazal regarding Chesed, that says that the Torah begins with Chesed and ends with Chesed. It begins with Chesed because HaKadosh Baruch Hu provided clothing for Adam and Chava, and it ends with Chesed that HaKadosh Baruch Hu buried Moshe Rabbeinu. So the Torah Tfilaso Divrei Chesed, Divrei Gemilas Chesedim, Misofo Divrei Gemilas Chesedim. So the whole Torah represents Gemilas Chesedim. Whichever way you work out the technicalities, clearly the message of this drasha is that Chesed, Machlok Pusa L'Tzadik, is more than simply a mitzvah, and it's really more than simply a big mitzvah. Conceptually, Chesed is the foundation of the world. Olam Chesed Yibana. And there's a lot more to it than a mitzvah or even a super mitzvah. There's an interesting medrash referring to Avraham Avinu. After Avraham Avinu had his bris at the age of 99, so it says that he was sitting in the doorway of his tent, Kichom Hayom. Rashi brings down, a well-known Chazal, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu removed the sun from its cover, whatever it was, and made it unusually hot. So there were no travelers, so people shouldn't bother Avraham Avinu. Right? They didn't have air-conditioned camels. So nobody was traveling in the great heat. Avraham Avinu was not happy with that circumstance, so he wanted visitors, he wanted guests, he wanted people he could do chesed with. So he sent out Eliezer, his Eved, to look for travelers. So Eliezer goes wandering around the different roads, can't find anybody. You imagine it wasn't so easy for Eliezer. There was a reason why there were no travelers out on the roads. It was extremely hot. Eliezer was Moshe Nefesh to go running around looking for travelers, comes back and reports to Avraham Avinu, nobody's out there. So Avraham Avinu says, "Let hemnusa ba'avda." You can't trust a slave. Avraham Avinu gets up himself, even though he was sick, 3 days after the meal, and he's going to go and find guests. At that moment, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent to three malachim, so Avraham shouldn't have to run around himself.
So that proves the point that you can't trust the slave.
I guess so. So the altar for Sabaka asked the question, obvious question, what do you mean you can't trust the slave? This is Eliezer. Avraham doesn't trust him. How come he sends Eliezer to find a shidduch for Yitzchak? Apparently he did trust him. Eliezer is the one that it says Dolo Moshek Bitarasa Shal Avram. He was Avram's Rosh Yeshiva. He was his main teacher. He's called Moshe B'chol Shalos and Chazal, that he was Moshe everything that he had, meaning he had control over his own Yetzirah. So Eliezer was a tzaddik. Eliezer was a Talmud Chacham. He happened to have been a slave too, but he wasn't your typical slave. And Avram trusted him so much that he put the Shidduch of Yitzchak in his hands. And here Avram is sitting at the doorway of the tent, and he sees there are no travelers out there. He knows how hot it is. And he comes back, and Eliezer says, there's nobody out there, less than Nusa Ba'avda. How could that be? So the author of Sabbath explained that Avram Avinu understood Olam Chesed Yibana, that the world is built on Chesed. There is no such thing as a situation in the world where it's impossible to do chesed. There is no such thing. Because the world is founded on chesed. If there would be no opportunity for chesed, the world wouldn't exist. So Avraham Avinu was faced with a remarkable dilemma. Avraham Avinu said, all these years I trusted Eliezer. I thought Eliezer was different than the average Eved. He's a Talmud Chacham, he's a Moshe B'chol HaShalo, he's my chief assistant, right-hand man. This is not your run-of-the-mill Eved. You know, Eliezer, we all know, Eliezer had hoped that his daughter could marry Rivka, Ulai, Eli, maybe my daughter, could marry Yitzchak. Eliezer wasn't stupid. He wouldn't have such a hope if it wasn't a reasonable Havamina, so to speak. Avram trusted Eliezer. But he had a contradiction. So sometimes, you know, you have a steer in Rambam, you have to be Mechadish Chedushim. I have a contradiction. It's true. All these years I trust, I see nothing wrong with Eliezer. If you were to ask me, I would trust him. I would trust him with my son Shidduch. But it can't be. It's impossible. What he is reporting to me is that all the efforts I am making to do chesed, I can't do chesed, something is wrong. Zet min derfun. I must see that even Eliezer can't be trusted. How else do you explain this? The world couldn't exist without chesed. And the truth of the matter is, Avraham Avinu was right. He was missing one part of the equation. And later he apparently realized that because he did trust Eliezer, he sent him on the Shidduch mission. The one part of the equation that he was missing was the fact that there was no opportunity for Avraham Avinu to do chesed was in itself a chesed. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu was moti chamim yatikishol to do a chesed to Avraham. But if not for that, Avraham would have been right. There would have been, there had to be. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu was doing a chesed to Avraham when Avraham clearly demonstrated that he didn't really want that chesed. So then he sent him halachim. But the fact of the matter is, the world exists in chesed. It's not simply a mitzvah. And to come and say there's no opportunity for chesed is an impossibility. And if Eliezer reports that, I don't know what else to say. What else can I answer? Other than let some news about him. The Sfarim bring down that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, and we don't really understand exactly how these things work, but to a certain extent, the purpose of creation was so that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's chesed could express itself. That the Hatova of HaKadosh Baruch Hu should have a vehicle to be expressed. That's it. Olam Chesed Yibana. And we have to emulate HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That means we also have to be able to express our chesed. Just how far this goes can be brought out in a medrash. There's a medrash that tells us that there's going to come a time in the future. I don't know if it came already. Right, it's the future for the time the medrash is written. But there will be a time in history where the Chatom of Kal Yisrael are so great that the Kitrug, the prosecution in heavens, will carry the upper hand. And there is a Malach in Shemayim who is designated as the Malach Shel Yisrael. That's the Malach Michoel. And Michoel is going to be asked to present a defense for Kal Yisrael. And he will be silent. He'll have nothing to say. The evidence is overwhelming. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets up and says, well, if you're not going to defend Kal Yisrael, I'm going to have to do it myself. And he refers back to Kabbalah HaTorah. Kal Yisrael is Mekabel the Torah, and there are two explanations in the Medrash what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says. Before I tell you what the Medrash says, stop for a moment to think what we would say. If the Schus that saves Kal Yisrael at this terrible time in history is the Kabbalah HaTorah, what is the mile of a Kabbalah HaTorah? The Torah is the purpose of the whole world. It's the blueprint of the world. They accepted Torah, what the chashivas of Torah is, all the mitzvahs. Imagine all the Torah and mitzvahs done throughout the Doras because of Kabbalah HaTorah. We wouldn't think of it as a chesed. When we think of Kabbalah HaTorah as an act of chesed, the Medrash says that it was an act of chesed. Why? Because if Kal Yisrael would not have accepted the Torah, the world would have been destroyed. So by Kal Yisrael accepting the Torah, it saved everybody's lives. Saved the world. It's an act of chesed. Second interpretation in the Medrash is that by Kal Yisrael accepting the Torah, it taught the rest of the world about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's also an act of chesed. How about just Torah, teaching Torah to others? Apparently, the fact that Kal Yisrael accepted the Torah for themselves, to reach levels of spirituality, to learn the Torah, to do the mitzvahs, of course, is all very fine and well, but at that point in history, it would not have stood up. But the chesed that they did, that was the thing that saved them. This chesed was inadvertent. I don't think when Kal Yisrael was accepting the Torah, their kavanah was, let's do chesed to the world. If anything, they may be trying to save themselves. There was a mountain hanging over their head, after all. But the fact is, they did chesed to the world. So it's the chesed that sustained the world that HaKadosh Baruch Hu draws upon at that particular juncture in history. So it's a remarkable thing. Now, what chesed is has to be very carefully understood. For chesed to truly be chesed, it isn't simply the actions that you do, but it's the attitude with which you do them as well. There is a story, I don't know if it's a true story or not, I prefer to believe that it's not, but I don't know. But the story is told of two gedolim that were friends with each other. And one of them got sick. And he never informed, he was in the hospital, he never informed the other person that he was sick. Another, his friend, didn't hear about it until he was already better. So he was a little bit upset. He came to him and said, I don't understand. You know, you were sick in the hospital, nobody tells me, you know, message. If he would have told me for sure, he would have definitely come to visit you. So he said, you know, that's really why I didn't tell you. Because if you would have come to visit me, you would have come in order to do the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. You can't do Bikur Cholim without a sick person. So I would have been the sick person. You can't take a Leuven Esrei without a Leuven Esrei. So I would have been the Cheftza, and you would have been the Gavra. I didn't feel like being a Cheftza to your Gavra. I would have been the object, you would have been the person. I didn't feel like being an object, you're going to be the person. What did he mean? He was criticizing him. He meant to say that when you come into Chesed, you're doing Chesed as if it was Leuven Esrei. It was a Maisa Mitzvah. I have to do a Mitzvah. Chesed is a Mitzvah. So that's not Chesed. Chesed is to really feel for the other person, to really care about the other person. It's Hatova. So the feeling is part of the Mitzvah. Every Mitzvah is greater if you do it with the right Kavanas. But Chesed is qualitatively different. It's not to say that if a person does Chesed without feeling for the other person, that it's worthless. It's still worth something. In fact, I once heard from a Meir Chadash, said an interesting thing. He was talking about the concept that we find in Chazal, that there are certain things which you might call chumras or extra hidurim that a person really is not supposed to do unless he's really holding at that level. To do it in a meaningless, without the heart behind it, in a meaningless way, is not valid. They bring down a story in Chazal that Rabbi Yossi bar Yishmoz, or Yishmoz bar Yossi, I forget, Rabbi Yossi bar Yishmoz, I think it is, said, "Ano legabi Abba kechala legabi chamra." I compared to my father is like vinegar compared to wine. My father, when he eats meat, waits 24 hours before he drinks milk. And I will eat meat in one meal and drink milk in the other meal. So you're talking about a Tana, well, who keeps all the mitzvahs in the Torah. There are much harder things to do than to wait 24 hours for milk. He doesn't speak Lashon Hara. That's not easy. So if he thought it was such a wonderful thing to wait 24 hours, so do it. That you admire your father so much, you wait 24 hours. So you wait 24 hours. You think it was the hardest thing he ever did? Teretz, he said, yeah, I could do it, but it wouldn't mean anything. I'm just imitating my father. I wouldn't feel like, hey, I ate meat, I shouldn't eat milk now. It wouldn't mean anything to me. So there's no point in doing it. But my father had such a yiras hached that he felt, if I just ate meat, how can I drink milk right away? It's 18 hours later, he still felt that way. So, and his madrega was meaningful to wait 24 hours. But for me to do it would have been a joke. It would have been just a shell of an action. It's not a mitzvah, so you don't do these kinds of things. But Amir Chodesh said that's when it comes to Beinom Lamako. But when it comes to Beinom Lachavero, even something which is a midas chasidus, which you're not required al pidin, you should do as long as you're not going to be resentful, as long as it's not counterproductive. If you push yourself too far, then it could become counterproductive. You're going to get angry, you're going to be resentful, you're going to feel taken advantage of. It's a different story. You're not holding. But let's say I don't really feel like I want to do it, but I understand intellectually it would be a good thing to do, and I'll force myself and I'll do it. Then you have to do it. Because why should the other guy suffer because you're not holding in that madrega? So therefore there is an Indian. He brought a Gemara, I don't remember the names, bad with names, but the Gemara tells us, I think one of the Amaraim hired workers to transport jugs for him. And the workers were negligent, whatever, and they dropped the jugs and broke them. So he took them to a Din Torah, want them to pay for the jugs. They were poor workers. So he came, I believe he came before Rav Nachman, and Rav Nachman said, no, you don't have to pay. So he looked at Rav Nachman in surprise. There didn't seem to be any basis for this psak, and he said, Dina hachi? Is that the halacha? He says, in, yes. He quotes a pasuk about chesed. Then the workers came, chutzah that they had, and they were toveya, this hamora, they wanted them to pay their salary for transporting the jugs. So he didn't want to do it. They're back in court. Rav Nachman tells him to pay. He says, Dina hachi, is that halacha? He says, in the asisa yashav ato b'nei Hashem elikecha. So what Ramei Chodesh explained was obviously that was not the din. The din was that these workers are chayav to pay for the jugs, and the din was that he isn't chayav to pay their salary. But Rav Nachman understood that he was definitely on the madrega that he was able to do it. And he told him, for you it's the din. This is not the din for the rest of the world But for you, it's the din. Because anything you are capable of doing, even if you don't feel, if he felt like doing it, he wouldn't have been in court. Right? If he felt on his own, I want to do it, I want to help these people, he wouldn't have been in court. He would have helped them without coming to court. But he said, yeah, you didn't feel like doing it, but you could do it, and you won't be resentful, and won't harm you in any way, and won't harm them in any way. Therefore, I'm telling you to do it. So there's a concept, Be'elam L'chaveru, that even if you don't have the feelings, you should do it anyway. But it's not really the chesed of Olam Chesed Yibana. So you can make a simple cheshbon. So if you're going to do it anyway, it's going to cost you the same money. You might as well feel it and get the credit for Olam Chesed Yibana.
Might feel
resentful
just because of
God. Okay, in general, well, he obviously expressed it and he got an answer. Right. In general, as I've mentioned before, don't try this at home. To judge another person's psyche, whether he's going to feel resentful or not, is not the kind of business we should be engaged in, because you're probably going to be wrong. But, you know, Renachman was a great person and probably knew him very well and was able to make that judgment. It isn't something that a normal judge should do in a Din Torah. But the message is that if a person is able to help another person, even if he doesn't really feel like it, and isn't really fulfilling the chesed with the full depth of what chesed is supposed to be, it's still worthwhile, it's still a mitzvah, and you should still do it. But the real mitzvah, to really achieve olam chesed yibana, that the world is based on, is to do it with that hargash, with that feeling. Now, I thought just to point out something else about this chazal. The way the medrash is worded is called Hamachal Prusa L'Tzadik. Gives a piece of bread to a tzadik, Kilukayim Hamisha Sifrei Torah. That's not exactly what Barzillai did. Let's think a moment of what Barzillai did. First of all, it wasn't just David. David had an entourage. We don't know exactly how many people there were, 50 people, 100 people. And he gave him, not just for a little piece of bread, he gave him full supplies, bread and oil. It was probably pretty expensive. And this was at a point in time that David and his group were really desperate. Chazal tells us, Gam ki elech begeit Talmavesh, David HaMelech said, even when I go into the valley of Talmavesh, the shadow of death, Lo ira ra, that refers to this point in time when he was in the Midbar Yehuda dying of hunger and thirst. That's Geit Samavas. So he literally saved David's life and the people with him. He did this at great risk, because at this point in time, it was not at all clear that David would regain the throne. If anything, the smart money was probably on Avshalom. Avshalom had control of the capital, had control of the army, David was left with a small band of followers. And in point of fact, to go through the parasha there, had Avshalom listened to the advice of Achitophel and pursued David immediately, he, by all natural means, he would have prevailed. Of course, we know HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world, and Nisim could always happen. But by all natural means, Avshalom would have prevailed. Somehow, Avshalom was confused and followed the advice of Hushai HaArki, who was David's spy, and did not pursue him immediately. But he was on the verge of losing the battle. So Barzillai Giladi had, as we mentioned before, had no hope of reward. But more than that, could you imagine what Avshalom's reaction is going to be if he finds out that Barzillai Giladi provided food and water to David when he was running away? I would assume that would be curtains for Barzillai. So he did this at risk to his life. He risked his life to provide bread and all kinds of supplies to David and all his men. And what does the Medrash call it? Machal Prusa L'Tzadik. Ever he gave a piece of bread to a tzadik. It really sounds like it's undercutting what Barzillai did. And I think the explanation is, Avada, I am sure Barzillai got the full reward that he deserved, whether it's Olam Hazeh, Olam Haba, or both, for the tremendous Mesiras Nefesh and for risking his life and everything that he did. But what Chazal is telling us, he didn't need all of that in order to be Zolchot Tzidu Kayim Chamisha Chum Shein Torah. The mere fact that he gave a piece of bread to a tzaddik in and of itself is enough to qualify. The extras are extras, and he's going to get Schar for that too. And the rewards will be great. But Chazal understood that the Etzem action itself, simply giving Prusa to a tzaddik in and of itself, is enough to merit the title of Kilu Kiyem Chamisha Sifrei Torah. It does also seem from this Chazal that it makes a difference who you give the bread to. It doesn't say Kol HaMachla Prusa La'ani. It says Kol HaMachla Prusa L'Tzadik. That's not to say that it's not a mitzvah if you're Machla Prusa to an Ani who's not a Tzadik, but to this Vizokha, to this title Ki'ilu Ki'im Chamisha Sifrei Torah, it has to be a Tzadik. Why? On a basic level, I think the answer is that a tzaddik uses it properly. Whatever you give him, he uses properly. In his life itself, he uses properly. So it's a good investment. And if you give, to sort of use an extreme example, you know, you always have this dilemma when you have these I'm not sure what the politically correct term is anymore, but these homeless people on the street and come ask for change. And you never know what they're using that change for. You know, getting drunk or getting drugs. You know, who knows? So you never really feel like you're necessarily doing a chesed. Now, there's miles and miles between the homeless individual and the tzaddik. There's beinonim, there's people. You know, it's definitely a chesed. But it's not the same. What a tzaddik does is much different. There's a Gemara in Brachos has a similar idea. It says, Hama'areach tamil chacham mahana also. Kilu may be carbon tamid. Right? If a person takes in a guest, a tamid chacham, and feeds him and gives him hana, it's like you bring a carbon tamid. It's like you're giving it to HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. Because this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants the world for. We know Chazal tell us, Gemara in Shabbos, that Sof davar kol nishma es elikim yirav es mitzvasav shemar kizeh kol ha'adam. Pasuk at the end of Koheles. In the end, in the final analysis, after taking everything into consideration, you should fear Hashem and you should do His mitzvahs, because this is Kol HaAdam, this is all of mankind. So what do you mean this is all of mankind? And there are different variations in the Gemara. The whole world is only created for such a person. The whole world is only created to keep company to such a person. He'd be lonely if he was the only one in the world. So we need the rest of the world, Nebuch. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is interested in the tzaddik. One tzaddik can be worth the entire world. And we don't understand the value of the potential value of a single individual. But one individual could be worth the entire course of nature. Chazal tell us that they made a comment that there was two Talmid Chachamim that were walking, talking, and learning, and it was hot, and they were tired, and they sat in a bench in a park in the shade. These parks were built by the Romans. So they commented the Roman Empire was worthwhile so that this tzaddik could sit on that bench in the shade. I assume HaKadosh Baruch Hu may have had other cheshbonos with the Roman Empire as well. But in terms of value, it's worth it. The world, HaKol Bishvil Yisrael Sheisasku B'Torah. I had my own variation of this. There are a few questions on it, but I'll share it with you anyway. It says, why do we have so many Chinese? A billion Chinese. How are they Bishvil Yisrael Sheisasku B'Torah? So today you'll say, because they manufacture cheap merchandise, and therefore Bnei Torah could afford to buy whatever it is they need. Maybe that's so. But I can't deny that. But years ago I thought a different explanation. You know, during the Vietnam era, Vietnam was not a popular war, and people who were learning in yeshiva were deferred from the draft. So you had this phenomenon that was emerged, the draft dodger yeshivas. Some of them were frauds, and I'm not condoning that, but some of them were legitimate. They started yeshivas, and they got people who really otherwise had no interest in going to yeshiva. Some of them were not even from. And they registered and made them come and learn because you want to get out of the army. A number of people became Bali Chuba because of that. A number of people became Bnei Torah because of that. Why did the United States get involved in Vietnam? Some, excuse the expression, God-forsaken country in the other end of the earth. It's because they were afraid of the Chinese. They didn't have so many hundreds of millions of Chinese. There may not have been a Vietnam War, and all these people would not have gone to yeshiva. Hakol b'shul Yisrael sheis asku b'tal. Why they're still around? I guess that's for the cheap merchandise. Once they were there already. But the fact of the matter is, I am a little bit joking, but I'm not so sure that I'm wrong. The fact of the matter is, for a tzaddik, for somebody to learn Torah, it's because Baruch Hu creates the entire world. That's also true. Yeah, right? That was Japan.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, that was Japan. They used Chinese territory that they had conquered, but it was Japan. That's why the Japanese are around. We have to explain everybody. An example, just in Chazal, just to give a more concrete tier, there is a, the Moavim, after their attempt to get Bilam to curse the Jews failed, so Bilam gave him different advice, and to try to trap the Jews into chait, and as a result of the chait, the Baal Peor, thousands of Jews died. And shortly thereafter, a tzivu from HaKadosh Baruch Hu was given to Moshe Rabbeinu to attack Midian. So Roreth HaMidianim V'Kisem Osam, because they joined Moab in this conspiracy. The obvious question is, okay, Midian was the secondary offender, but the primary offender was Moab. How come nothing was said about Moab, only Midian? And Chazal say, because Kadosh Baruch Hu said, I don't want to do anything to Moab. I have somebody important coming out of Moab. That's Rus. Rus HaMoavia. So therefore, I'm going to leave them alone. So what does that mean? That means the fate of Midian was that Midian was wiped off the map. Moab should have been wiped off the map. But they were preserved for one person. So the entire course of history was changed. The entire nation of Moab was spared. Generation to generation, thousands and thousands of people for hundreds of years, just because of one person that was going to come out of Moab. That's what it means. Tzadik Yisod Olam. One person can be the foundation of the world. Kol Olam Kulo Nivra El Lazer El Tzavos Lazer. I don't know about that. How do you know? You ever discussed this with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? There might have been a reason why Ruth had to come out of Moab. You know, those types of questions, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have done things differently, are beyond us. We don't know what HaKadosh Baruch Hu's questions are. We can only look at things the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu did do them and try to learn the lessons from that. So one person being a tzaddik can make a very big difference, and therefore giving bread to a tzaddik is not the same thing as giving bread to a regular person. Another example of tzaddik yisod olam, one person making such a difference, you find the Gemara in Sanhedrin at the time of Tzidkiyahu the king. The Gemara tells us that the entire world was Rishaim, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to destroy the world. But because of Tzidkiyahu, he saved them. Tzidkiyahu was Tzadik Yisod Olam, meaning the world literally would have been destroyed if not for this one person, Tzidkiyahu. Derech Agav, Tzidkiyahu is a very interesting person in how Chazal looked at it. Although in the very same Gemara, the Gemara says that Tzidkiyahu saved the entire world with his tzidkus. Chayisos Rishayim, he was the Tzadik Yisod Olam. At the same time, we find a pasuk that refers to Tzidkiyahu as a Rasha. So we might ask the question, how could that be? Here you're telling me he's tzaddik, he saved the world. Now you're telling me he's a Rasha. So the Gemara answers, because Tzidkiyahu should have again tochacha, should have remonstrated, should have pushed Kal Yisrael to tshuva, and he didn't. And therefore, to a certain extent, he was held guilty for the sins of Kal Yisrael. At the same time, he was still a tzaddik yisod olam. You know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu judges everything in a person. He could be a great tzaddik, and he could have something about him that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is negative, but doesn't mean that the tzidkus is ignored. What's kind of interesting is, and the Marsha goes into this in that Gemara, was that Tzidkiyahu had other strikes against him. First of all, there was a nevuah that was given to him from Yirmiyahu that he ignored, did not follow up on. He broke the shvuah that he made with Nebuchadnezzar. And apparently he was punished for it. But that's not what Chazal point out as the reason why he was called a Rasha, even though he's really a Tzaddik. And the Marsha says, all those things, those other two things that he did, he only did because of fear. He was afraid of the people who were threatening to kill him, and there was quite a good chance that they would. So therefore he went along with them, but he himself didn't want to do it, and therefore that ameliorates the chait, it reduces the sin. L'chora, if that's the case, one would assume the reason he didn't give them tochacha was also because of fear. If he was afraid they would kill him if he didn't rebel against Nebuchadnezzar, he didn't ignore Yirmiyahu's instructions, probably he was afraid to give him tochacha as well. And apparently, though, on that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu would not be mevater. And as you did things because of fear, okay, I could understand, I could excuse it. But you didn't help your fellow Jews. You didn't try to teach them. You didn't try to bring them closer to Torah. You're afraid? So what? Do it anyway. So that's not it was a valid excuse for the other things, but it was not a valid excuse for failure to reach out to help Kaiser, which kind of fits in with the theme of this pasuk, Olam Chesed Yibane. Other things, okay, but chesed, help your fellow Jews. There's no chesed greater than that, than to bring people back to Torah. You're afraid. I understand you're afraid. You have very good reason to be afraid. You should risk your life. And if you die, you die. But try to help. The situation is desperate. So when it comes to helping others, there's a higher demand. So again, Barzillai HaGiladi, because of the chesed that he did with David, particularly since it was David who was a tzaddik, was considered kilu kiyam chamisha chum sheitara, and David himself is attempting to be makir that tov, to pay it back by inviting the children of Barzillai to be a permanent guest of the throne. A little bit we see though what it means chesed, all chesed yibana, and what it means to be a tzaddik and the role that a tzaddik plays in the world. And every individual of course could strive towards that. But those who suspect they perhaps may not have reached that level should also keep in mind that if they are in an opportunity to help somebody perhaps who has or is a greater tzaddik, that could be a remarkable zuchus. Okay, now we get to the next instruction of David HaMelech, and that's Shimi ben Gera. He is going to be instructing Shlomo to basically make sure that Shimi ben Gera is put to death, or at least that's the way most of the Mefarshim learn, Pashup Shah and the Pasuk. We need to know a little bit about the relationship between Shlomo and Shimi ben Gera. Shimi ben Gera was Shlomo's Rebbe. And it says, V'hine imcha Shimi ben Gera. Shimi ben Gera is with you. What do you mean with you? Because he was your Rebbe, so you're always hanging around him. He was the one who taught you Torah. So this is a particularly difficult instruction. Shlomo is being told to kill his own Rebbe because Shimi ben Gera, whatever he did, again we're dealing with Inyan Mamar ben Malchus, and presented a threat to the throne. And if you want to be a king, sometimes you got to be tough. It's not a place for those who faint of heart, because everything depends on you. There's a lot at stake. And this instruction was given to Shlomo HaMelech. So the pasuk says, "V'hine imcha Shimi ben Gera, and with you is Shimi ben Gera, ben HaYamini, the son of the Yamini, meaning from Shevet Binyamin." Shimi ben Gera was related to Shaul. Shaul was from Shevet Binyamin. And really the hint here, this is what caused Shimi ben Gera to go off. Obviously Shimi ben Gera was a great Talmud Chacham. David would not have selected him as a Rebbe for Shlomo if he was a slouch. He was a great person, and yet he eventually rebelled against the king and cursed him and did whatever he did. Why? So his judgment, again, we've mentioned this time and time again, how people's judgment is distorted by their biases. He was in the family of Shaul. He clearly wanted Shaul to be king, and he wanted the Malucha to pass on to his children. It gave him a certain prestige and his family. And here David comes and takes it away. And Shimi had persuaded himself that what David did was improper, even though he did it al pi the command of Shmuel HaNavi. somehow he managed to bypass that and managed to feel that the W was wrong. We have a tremendous capacity to do that, to come up with justifications for positions, even where it would seem to be impossible. We are very, very creative. And we are very extreme. I think it doesn't take a whole lot in today's world to see how that goes. Things that the entire world had a consensus not that long ago that was wrong, and now it's not only not wrong, but it's a great noble cause, you know, to promote it. And there are a number of things like that. You don't need to get into the gory details, but anybody who pays attention could see how people have their most inevitable. They believe that they're doing a noble thing to promote causes that not that long ago everyone acknowledged and recognized was evil. But that's the way it is. We have this capacity to rationalize. The Torah itself alludes to that. The Torah tells us that there were a series of brachos and klalos, curses, given har grizim har evil. The pasuk says, "Laman yilmedu liyoras Hashem elokecha." So the Medrash says that the purpose of these brachos and klalos was to instruct us as to what is good and what is bad. Not simply to threaten us, but to instruct us. Because without the curses, people would rationalize it. When you raise the stakes and you make it very important, maybe people will hear your message. So that means the items mentioned, these brachos and klalos, because Rebbe was afraid that people would say, no, it's a mitzvah, it's not an avera. Backwards is forwards, and forwards is backwards. What things? What was Hashem afraid of? What would we turn into mitzvahs? Arur sholcheivim behema. Have relations with animals. We're not that far away from that in today's society. Right, now with giving animals, you know, human rights and so on, it won't be long before society reaches that. So that's not such a big surprise to us. Arur lokeach shochad la'arog nefesh dam naki. A curse is a person who takes a bribe in order to put to death an innocent man. Somebody might think that that's a mitzvah. You know, to see, he didn't do the crime, but he's not such a good guy anyway, you know, and it's this and whatever it is. The capacity for rationalization and justification is phenomenal, as long as we have the bias, the motivation to do it. And apparently that's what happened with Shimi ben Gera, although he was a great person, had great qualities, but because of this bias that he wanted Shaul and his family to maintain the melucha, he was able to persuade himself all kinds of things about David HaMelech, that David HaMelech had no right to the throne, despite the fact that it was an open instruction, nevuah from Shmuel HaNavi. Despite the fact that everybody else came around, even after everybody else came around and acknowledged it, and Avner and everybody acknowledged David as a king, he still harbored this resistance. And when the moment arrived that David was chased off the throne, even though at that point it was still David's son who was the king, it wasn't as if all of a sudden Shaul's family is going to get the throne back. Still, but David is getting his. And his hostility and his feelings towards David came out at that time. In part, by the way, the fact, and this is alluded to in the next pasuk, next word, in fact that he was such a great Talmud Chacham made Shimi more dangerous, because he was able to attract the following.